Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 124. Shrink Wrap Radio Live number 2, December 9, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional. Okay, what follows is once again a bit different from our usual Shrink Wrap Radio format. This past Sunday, actually today, Jerry Trumbull and I did a Shrink Wrap Radio Live on Blog Talk Radio. We had a couple of drop-in visitors, and we had three Shrink Wrap Radio listeners check in, one from Finland and two others who phoned in. As you'll hear, Jerry and I are having fun with this format and plan to do it again this coming Sunday, and this time with a guest. More about that at the end of today's show. We lost about 10 minutes in the beginning due to a technical problem, so we'll jump in at the point where Jerry decides to share a dream that he woke up from this morning. Well, you had indicated to me that you had a dream, and you wanted to start off talking about your dream.
Well, I've noticed your interest in dreams through your show, and of course you know that I had a intense interest in dreams when I was in graduate school and spent a lot of time trying to discover experimental variables that could be used to control dreaming, not very successfully, so I won't go into that, but I love it when I have a vivid dream. Usually it's the last dream of the night, the early morning, and generally speaking, I wake up every 90 minutes at the end of a sleep cycle, which normally is a slow wave sleep period followed by a short period of REM, rapid eye movement sleep.
And you tend to naturally wake up after each cycle?
Yes, I do. I think I've kind of trained myself that way.
Is that irritating to you? I mean, it kind of interrupts your night of sleep. Does that bother you, or is that okay with you?
It's okay with me because I think of sleep as coming in 90-minute packets.
Yeah. Well, that's what we know that happens.
And I know most people I've read that most people just kind of turn over or readjust their position or whatnot, and are not fully aware that they've come out of sleep a little bit and then go back in. I generally look at the clock, take a drink of water, readjust my position, and then go right back to sleep. So it doesn't really keep me from sleeping. And I must say, I don't wake up after every single 90-minute packet. But generally, I wake up at around 5:30 or so, and I'm kind of feeling good about it because I'm expecting the feature-length film. As these packets go on through the night, the percentage of REM sleep, dreaming sleep, gets bigger and bigger. And I have a theory that the reason a standard feature-length film is 90 minutes long is to match that 90-minute REM sleep period.
That's an interesting theory. I've never heard that. That's intriguing.
It's just one of my many theories.
Right. Hey, that's why I want you on the show.
So I go, okay, now let's get into it. So I fell back asleep this morning, and it seemed like instantly I was at the movies. And I was in the middle of doing this show. I'm wearing a headset, and I was kind of looking out of the window as I was talking. Now, there is no window to look out in my real situation. But I was looking out, and the scene was not the snow-covered Colorado where I actually live, but I was kind of up on a hill, and I could see a large concrete driveway in the front. And I had my headset on,
Now, you know what? I should probably interrupt you here and and instruct you to, in typical California DreamWorks style, that now really has spread far beyond California, I think. We ask the dreamer to tell their dream in the present as if it were happening now. So it would be, I'm looking out the window. The purpose of this is to get you kind of back into the dream as much as possible.
Okay. And as you know, I wrote this dream down as soon as I got up.
Yeah.
So I do have my notes from then. But
right.
So I'm looking out the window, and I've got my headset on, and I'm talking to you just as we're doing now. But then I notice a huge cloud of smoke or a pillar of smoke rising up just beyond the driveway, and it's some serious smoke. I mean, it's not a little drifting. It's like a column of smoke. And I said to myself, well, this place is on fire. I got to go. So I ripped off my headset and ran out of the room. And there I saw there was a hallway with a lot of windows, and people were all looking out the window, and they were looking at the rain that was now falling, putting out the fire. And strangely, my sister was among those people.
Okay,
and,
now, at the risk of being irritating, strangely, my sister is among those people. I'm trying to bring you into the present.
Into the present. My sister is there. She looks at me, and we all agree kind of implicitly that the rain is going to put out the fire. But everyone's very calm, but I'm kind of agitated, having just interrupted our show. And I go back into the room where there's a large easy chair. Now I'm sitting in the easy chair, and I look up, and you come into the room with a cup of tea. I'm very surprised at this because I thought you were in California and I was in Colorado.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, Dave, what's going on here? And you kind of laughed and explained that it was kind of a joke on me that you had actually been in the next room during this phone blog talk radio that we were doing, and that at some point you were going to reveal yourself as a bit of a joke on me, and I was still baffled by the whole thing. Then a man phones in, and he says he's been listening to the show, and he wants to talk about the fact that it was interrupted by the fire. I told him that the show was over and we didn't really have time to talk. Then we start up, we go outside, still in the building complex, to the parking garage. And we're walking up a ramp, and we can look down. We're at the top level. We can look down to the lower level, where, strangely enough, there's a small single-engine plane with no wings sitting there. And the vehicles are all kind of out of order. They look like they've been jumbled around. I'm starting to suspect that there was an earthquake that created the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go over and get in a yellow Ford Fairlane. Now, I couldn't even tell you what a Ford Fairlane looks like, but in the dream, I knew that it was a yellow Ford Fairlane.
Yeah, that's funny the way dreams work that way, where you just kind of know.
Yeah, so, and I'm driving, and we're going down the ramp. I'm going very slowly. We come to the next level where there's a overhead, and as we go under it, I can hear the roof scraping the cement above. And now I'm convinced that the whole structure has settled because of this earthquake. And I said, in fact, at that time, see, the whole structure is settled. It was definitely an earthquake. And
yeah.
You weren't so sure. While we're slowly inching down this ramp, we pass a tall man who is talking to some people assembled there, and I overhear him say that this hurricane has just occurred, and it was kind of a very surprising thing. But I can tell that he's using the word hurricane to mean earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's kind of saying hurricane in quotes.
Yeah.
Well, then we continue driving, and suddenly it's night, and we go by a restaurant where we remember that we've both eaten there, and then that's the end of the dream.
Interesting. Now, have you reflected on this dream at all? Do you make anything of it? And by the way, I want to let you know, I don't know if you had an eye on the chat window. I was both listening to the dream, plus I have the advantage that you sent it to me, so I have it written out here as well. We have Tomi in Finland is with us in the chat room, and it's 8 o'clock in the evening in Finland.
Hey, Tomi, welcome aboard. I see your chat here. Thanks for chatting in.
Yeah, we're so happy to have at least one listener that we know about. It brings meaning to the whole enterprise.
Yeah.
So back to my question, have you reflected on this? Do you have any hits on how it might relate to your life?
First, let me couch this with a few statements. First of all, I pay a lot of attention to dreams, and hopefully we'll get to talk about hypnagogic phenomena in a little bit. But my belief is that dreams reflect what's going on in another area of our brain that we might call the subconscious, and it kind of pops up in interesting, sometimes funny ways in what we call our dreams. I think you pointed out that Freud said that we're aware of 5% of what's actually going on in our mind or our brain.
Right.
And so I feel that this dream was a reflection of the fact that yesterday, I had a very busy day, and at the end of the day, I was going, oh, that's right, I'm going to be on Blog Talk Radio tomorrow with Dave. That'll be fun. I was kind of looking forward to it. Went to sleep without any problem. So clearly the show was on my mind.
Yeah.
That's the dream. That's not very insightful, but... And then the part about you appearing and my being baffled, it reminded me of some of the practical jokes that we used to do in college.
Oh, that's right.
Where people would pop in pretending to be a school counselor and say various things. I mean, we would script these complex jokes all at somebody else's expense, of course.
Right.
And I felt like I was in one of those because you were, I was going, Dave, what are you doing here? it was beyond my comprehension that you had actually been in the next room pretending to be in California, but wanting to surprise me with the fact that we were actually physically going to see each other for the first time in, 30 years? And it was going to be a surprise. The fire was incidental to that, and I haven't really thought about what the fire represents. Clearly, the show was disrupted. And I don't know what that means either. That was why I was hoping that Dr. Dave could give me some insight.
Okay. Well, here's Dr. Dave's take on this. What leapt out at me, and I'm interested in the reflection about the practical jokes from college and so on, because I certainly remember that as being one of our delights in our younger years. And now I know we're both somewhat appalled to think back on some of the pranks that we played back in those days.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing that really leaps out at me is, in fact, the fire, the hurricane, the earthquake, because those are so dramatic catastrophic, I guess that's the other word mm-hmm. I'm looking for. And you were talking mm-hmm. about how you feel that dreams reflect something that's going on some kind of mental processing that maybe, is happening in the background. And mm-hmm. I go a step further to say that I think that often dreams are commenting about that they're reflecting emotional realities in our lives, that they relate to things that are going on with us emotionally, sometimes things that we're fully aware of and that we know, yeah, this is a big thing for me, and I'm dreaming about it because it is such a big thing in my life. Sometimes mm-hmm. things that maybe we have thought were peripheral to our emotional life, and sometimes the dream can have the function of kind of bringing it more in front and center and saying, hey, here's something you need to look at.
And yeah, I can accept that. As you know, I have a blog called DenverDirect.tv, and in that blog, I'm currently engaged in a big battle with some local officials here, and I'm very forthright about what I think and what I feel, and I say things that after I posted the blog, I wonder if I have gone too far. You know, I posted one recently called Queen Carla, which is about the city council representative who I was against in the election, but who got elected anyway. And so there is some emotional involvement there because I'm trying to be honest and straightforward. At the same time, I realize I can't just start screaming and ranting and raving. So.
Yeah, well, you know, knowing you as I do, a similar, a not unrelated to what you're saying thing that popped up for me was not even, not just that blog, but your other blog, Astounding News, which is really, tends to be a cry of alarm, you know, that you kind of see the world going to hell in a handbasket really quick, and you're trying to alert the world to that fact, right?
That's true. That's true. And recently I've been even more dire in my thoughts about the coming fascist state, the collapse of the dollar and the world's economic system, and the chaos and mayhem that will be forthcoming after that.
Yeah, now I have to leap on your use of the word the collapse of the dollar, which to me is echoed in the collapsing parking structure in the dream.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I feel a kind of parallel resonance there. So yeah, this very much fits the Jerry Trumbull that I know.
Yeah, the catastrophe everywhere, yeah. The fire, the smoke, the earthquake, the hurricane. And that's an interesting point because the tall man is trying to cover, everybody's trying to pretend that there wasn't an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
He's using the word hurricane as a mask.
Yeah.
The fact that it was really a collapse, it was an earthquake, the whole structure is coming down, and we just barely squeezed through the opening to get out of the parking garage.
Well, the tall man could definitely be kind of symbolic of authority. You know, we talk about the man and the tall man, you know, the big man, the president, the king, whatever, that person high in authority. So in this dream, you have the sense that the tall man or the man doesn't speak plainly.
That's right. In fact, if I think about it, I'm imagining that he might have been the head of the Federal Reserve Bank or maybe the Secretary of the Treasury or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not in the dream, but I think maybe symbolic.
Yeah.
He's going like, oh, no, that was some kind of a hurricane, but no earthquake. We don't have to worry about that. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Right.
They're saying, oh, the housing bubble is over, and we don't have to worry about that. And instead, we're going to have this new program where you don't have your teaser loan rates will not be adjusted, and you'll have 5 years and so on. This is not going to have any effect. Just like in the dream, it didn't change the fact that the parking structure was collapsing. So I think you're onto something there, Dave.
Well, that's great. And I also see that we have a regular Shrink Wrap Radio listener here, Susan G. I just want to say hi to her in the chat room.
Yes, Susan, hello.
Yeah, I think I recognize that name, actually, from emails in the past. And so it's great to have you here, Susan. And I also see guest number 126. Let's see if they can maybe identify themselves.
Dave, and another thing I was hoping that you would mention, I think for a lot of people, the call-in feature involves a long-distance call to
New
York City. But maybe they are not fully aware of Skype and the fact that I think it's $14.95 will buy you a whole year, if you live in the United States, of free long-distance calls. So for some, that might be a solution to go ahead and get Skype, that's S-K-Y-P-E, download it for free, try it out, and see if that would provide a mechanism for a call-in to places like this show.
That's right, because that's how both you and I are calling in, and we've paid our $14.95 for the year, and after having made that pretty reasonable payment, we're both calling in now to New York. Me from California, you from Denver, and we're calling in for free. And you and I talk on a regular basis all the time for free.
Right.
It's actually turns out to be a better deal than talking on our cell phone, I find. I have just reduced my cell phone plan. I was on a 900-minute a month plan. And I use Skype so much now, I rely on Skype, that, you know, I cut down to the 400-minute a month plan, which will save me some money.
I went even further than that. I got rid of my cell phone.
Wow. Oh, really? Okay. Well, I won't try calling you on your cell phone then. That's good to know.
But it just seemed like I wasn't using it once I got Skype. And of course, I'm without a laptop, so I'm kind of stuck here at my desktop computer. But with a laptop and Skype and a Wi-Fi connection, you can phone from anywhere you are if you have your laptop call anybody, actually anybody in the world. It's just there will be a charge for some connections.
Yeah, I see we have someone else has just joined us, Diane R., and I'm not sure if Diane is a regular Shrink Wrap Radio listener or not. Well, let's getting back into things psychological. You mentioned in the context of your dream, you said something about hypnagogic. And so let's talk a little bit about hypnagogic and hypnopompic dreaming. You want to say something about that?
Yeah, I've always had an interest in this. I should first explain that these words are used to describe an experience that can happen as you're falling asleep or as you're waking up, hypnagogic being the one where you're going from wakefulness to sleep. And the other one is hypnopompic. Is that it, Dave?
That's right. That's when you're coming out of sleep into the waking state.
Yeah. Well, I've been playing around with these things for most of my life, and I think I've developed something that may be of interest to other people. I don't think I was the first one to think of it, but what I do from time to time, usually when I'm ready to go to bed, but at first I did it when I was not actually sleepy or tired. I would just get in a comfortable chair and close my eyes. I would have no music playing and no distractions, and what I would try to do was to look into the void. Usually when you close your eyes, you stop trying to see. You stop looking. But in this case, I'm actively looking out into the what at first appears to be just darkness because I'm in a darkened room. And so I just sit there and I keep staring into the void. And eventually, and I think with practice it takes less and less time, eventually I start noticing that I'm seeing texture in the void. I'm seeing a kind of a dark velvet green texture. And I'm seeing it swirling around a little bit. Now, as an aside, I should tell you that I've also noticed, incidentally, that what I see in the void is directly related to any drugs that I may have taken, especially alcohol. If I've had a drink and then I try this, instead of this amorphous kind of velvet background, I see shooting stars. I see streaks of light going across my visual field.
And this is pretty reliable, huh?
Well, it was for me. Now, yeah. I quit drinking years ago, so I don't see that anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, right.
But I see a lot of it. But it's what I think you're actually, quote, seeing is your retinal activity without light coming in. So your little retinal cells are sitting there, are waiting for some light. No light is coming in, and they have a level of spontaneous firing. And so occasionally you'll see a little pixel go off here or there. But what I see, first of all, let me mention that I see two distinct eyeball areas. I don't see a unified field of vision. I can almost see, sometimes I can imagine that I can see my nose at the bottom. Or, you know, I'm actually peering out of these closed eyeballs. Then after a while, the nondescript background starts to take on shapes. I start to see patterns. I start to see rivers of color, muted at first, but growing stronger as I sit there longer and longer.
Cool.
At this point in time, if I imagine something I want to see, like a particular person or place or object, with great regularity, it will appear. But it's always a surprise. Let's imagine I'm trying to see a face. Well, when it appears, it's not like a mugshot looking right at me. Sometimes I'm seeing it from the side or from above or at a strange angle. Sometimes I'm seeing the whole person from the back. It doesn't seem to be under my control.
And is it necessarily the person that you set out to see, or might it be a different person?
That has happened. It's usually the person I set out to see, but sometimes somebody else pops up. And sometimes, and this isn't 100% by any means, sometimes things, objects, people, pop in with startling clarity. In other words, it's not this shifting dark velvet. It's a crisp photograph, a crisp object. Sometimes the object is something I wasn't even thinking about. Could be a car, and I know this is it's kind of a hackneyed thing, but I've actually seen a toaster. I like flying
toasters.
Toasters,
right?
Yeah, I actually saw a toaster, and they cruise by at their own speed.
Now, are you asleep at this point, would you say, or not?
No, I'm not asleep. If somebody came into the room, I would hear them coming into the room. I'd open my eyes. But it does require, for me, 5 to 10 minutes of looking into the void.
Well, I think that's a kind of talent that you have. I mean, you've described this to me before, and I've tried it, and it doesn't work for me. So I'm a little jealous.
Well, what do you see when you look into the void?
I see the void.
Does it have any texture? Is it all the same?
Well, you know, I see black, and then maybe I see some little lights. Now, I recall that when I was younger, like when I was in my teens, that there was a whole fireworks show going on that I used to watch, and I don't seem to get that vivid experience anymore. I'm not sure why. But unless I'm in the process of falling asleep, I don't get these hypnagogic images.
I think when you're first starting out, you should do it when you're not tired.
Mm-hmm.
And you should give it at least a half an hour. Now, I know that's a lot of time to just be sitting there looking into nothingness, but I think everybody can do this. In fact, I've told people about this over the years, and I've had people try it. Some have reported success. Others have. One person in particular said she was frightened out of her skull when she did this. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, I started seeing things, and then I felt like I was rushing out myself into the void and that I wouldn't be able to come back.
Yeah, well, this may relate to the out-of-body experience that some people have, right?
I think it could.
And also last week, I know we were talking a little bit about alien abductions, and I just want to slip in. Somebody reminded me of that name that I couldn't think of last week. It's Dr. John Mack, who was a psychiatrist. Unfortunately, he died, I think, sometime in the last year. But I actually got to hear him speak about the patients that he worked with, who he studied very closely on the topic of alien abduction. And I have to say, he didn't seem nutty, and he didn't find the people that he spoke to be nutty. But at any rate, back to your experience.
Well, no, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I recently met such a person, and she was totally convinced that she had been talking with aliens and had been taken away. And, well, anyway, to get on with this hypnagogic or hypnopompic experience, what I think happens is that when you close your eyes, you stop looking, you're basically cutting off the input from your inactive retinas. In this case, you're trying to see, even though you have your eyes closed, and your retina is starting to go into sensory deprivation. It doesn't have any input. So it's looking around for something to see, finding nothing. It's at some level. Now, I'm not sure it's at the retina level, but I don't think it's at a higher brain level. At some level, it starts to invent its own input. I think this kind of thing is reported in people that are undergoing sensory deprivation.
We may have another caller, Jerry, and so I'm going to interrupt you just because it's the first time that's ever happened. Do we have someone on the line here?
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Susan.
Oh, hi, Susan. Is this Susan G, who we saw logged into the chat?
That's right. I must tell you that this website has the best hidden play button I've ever could ever imagine. I'm visually impaired, and so I have been all over that friggin' page trying to find that play button.
Oh, my goodness.
But I did.
Okay, now the play button was what? The button that lets you listen to the show?
Yeah. Yeah, I had everything set up, but nothing would play until I hit that button. It didn't automatically play, in other words.
Why don't you send me an email about where it was, and then the next time we are planning one of these, okay, I'll try to remember to describe that to other people.
Okay.
Susan, this is Jerry. I was
Hi,
going
Jerry.
To say, don't feel bad, because I couldn't find it either. If you heard the first part of the show, you'll know that I was struggling to get where you are right now as well.
I see. Well, I have something to add also to your discussion.
Excellent.
I've been listening for about 2 or 3 minutes here. And since I'm visually impaired, and this is fairly recent, the last couple of years, I get to experiment with my brain changing, you know, adjusting to things. So you were talking about basically as you close your eyes, your retinas and your mind starts doing different things, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that happens to me quite a lot.
Wow.
And it usually comes in the form of faces, like as in Greek sculpture type faces, not
mm-hmm.
faces I know.
Oh.
But almost like going through a museum and looking at different faces that fade in and out.
Do you have control over that? Can you walk around in the spatial dimension in that experience?
I think I can turn the faces around. That is, I can make them, go from the side to the front. But I haven't tried that.
Do they ever start talking?
I don't think so.
Next time you have that, you might try communicating with them and see if you can get them to tell you something. I don't know what to say, but
I'm not sure. I want to know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd want to make sure that you felt comfortable with that. with
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the first time it happened, I was surprised. But actually, there's a name for this in Charles Bonnet syndrome. Have you heard of that?
No.
Well, it's something that occurs, I think, fairly frequently. If you do a web search, I think you'll find it at mdsupport.org. I know has a page of discussion about it. And
What is the it that is going to describe? What is the syndrome?
Oh, the syndrome is just basically that you're, even though you can't see things, there are things that appear.
Okay.
You know, like you may misinterpret something, or a tree looks like a person, or you see a movement and you overinterpret it as maybe a dog or a bear. And so within the part of the field of vision that you're not seeing, you may have some kind of apparition appear, and you apply an interpretation to it.
So in other words, this is in the context of visual loss or visual impairment, that stuff is getting filled in. That's interesting, because there's a similar, just slightly similar thing that happens. Oh, I just heard a little echo. Does somebody have their speaker turned up?
That's mine.
Okay, I'll try. Do you have headphones you can put on?
I'll just turn it off.
Okay. Are you still able to hear me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
Yes, yeah. I'm just on the phone.
Yeah, I'm still getting a little echo, but that's okay. I'll just try to ignore it. And I've had some hearing loss, and what happens is, so I suffer from, now I'm going to block on the word, Jerry, the ringing in my ears, it's called?
Tinnitus.
Tinnitus, thank you. And so I have tinnitus, and the way the tinnitus works, according to at least one theory, is the frequency that you lose is the frequency that you hear. So in other words, I've lost hearing at the high end, and so I hear this high-pitched ringing, so that the brain is somehow trying to fill in for something that has been lost. And it almost sounds like there's a similar thing happening with vision.
Yeah, and I have the same thing, Dave, as we've discussed, probably from loud rock and roll in my youth, but I also wanted to recount an experience I had when I used to work in experimental psychology labs. I had a soundproof room where I had individual chambers for rats to press levers in, and we had loud white noise piped into that room. So if I had to go in there and work for, say, a half an hour or an hour, I would hear the most amazing things. Clearly and distinctly, I would hear someone calling my name, and I would look around, and no one was there, and the door was closed, and nobody was calling my name. So I kind of got used to hearing those things in the field of white noise that was actually being delivered to my ears. And it kind of goes back to the idea that our brain, not getting its regular input from our senses, invents its own.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that state that we've been talking about, the hypnagogic state, some have described as a doorway into alternate realities. And whether you want to think of that as alternate realities that exist within the brain somehow, within the unconscious, or that there are somehow alternate realities out there, I mean, of course, that's kind of an open question. But Emanuel Swedenborg is a famous Swedish mystic who I think
could
was
you spell
a
lot. That day,
Swedenborg, it's Swedenborg, Emanuel Swedenborg.
Okay.
And I forget what his dates would be. Maybe you'll go on the web and let me know. You could probably go to Wikipedia and get some info on him. He was a statesman, I believe, a philosopher and something of a scientist for his era. And he used this state, as have some more modern scientists, have cultivated the kind of experience that you're talking about, Jerry. have kind of cultivated being able to hang out in that space between wakefulness and sleeping. Now, what happened with Swedenborg, and evidently he wrote one or more very long volumes about a whole sort of universe that he discovered in there with a hierarchy of beings that went up through various levels of angels down to various levels of demons, I believe. I've only read about this secondhand, and I haven't read them in the original, so I apologize for that. But it's interesting that there, you know, that this is a very fascinating kind of, as I say, doorway into some potentially unusual experiences, to say the least.
Yes, I have him up here on Wikipedia now. Quite an interesting guy. He's written a number of books, as you point out, one called Heaven and Hell. And apparently he believed that he could freely visit heaven and hell and talk with the angels, demons, and other spirits. And then he wrote 18 theological works and described this experience. One more thing I wanted to add to the discussion here is that in my playing around with this state, I think I have determined that it's separate from the theater, in quotes, of the mind's eye. I've tried to imagine something while I'm in the state, and I can do it, but it's on a different screen.
Hmm.
It's not the one I'm peering into. It's somewhere in the back of my head.
Hmm.
And I call it the mind's eye, where you can just, you know, you could conjure up a image of something to look at, but not necessarily going through the hypnagogic approach.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that pops into my mind is sort of more recently, but also deceased, is John Lilly, who was, I think he was a psychologist. I know he was a scientist of some sort.
Yes.
And,
yes, he was.
Yeah, and he experimented with LSD, first of all, with sensory deprivation, developed, I don't know if he invented it or not, the technique of immersing oneself in a tank of warm saline water. We have another caller, and we have only 7 minutes left. I want to bring in this other caller, but okay, I'll just finish my sentence before I do. And Lilly also, I don't know if this happened to him without LSD or just when he took LSD, but he had quite a few very interesting experiences floating in the dark during conditions of sensory deprivation. And on some of these, he was also taking LSD, and he also talked about another realm that he entered into where there were beings of various sorts. Let's see who's on, who this other caller might be.
Dr. Dave, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Who do we have here?
Ah. It's Tom Barbalay. Good to talk to you both.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Yes, indeed.
This is an amazing synchronicity, actually, because I had one of these dreams this morning. And what I found, or it's not really a dream, but whatever one would want to technically call it, what I found kind of deconstructing the events was that it only left me with partial information, and it was really in that almost coming awake state where I filled in the gaps. And what I found fascinating was I then went and verified the information, and there were actually connections which I found through this experience, which I must have been aware of on some subconscious level, but only came to me through this, you know, emerging from a dream and then reflecting on the dream experience. Now, my immediate response was to email the parties involved. Unfortunately, I'm very electronically connected, so email was the immediate thing. But as you've both noted, there's almost a psychedelia, really, to this kind of experience, and it's very difficult to communicate this kind of thing on a technical level. In terms of the deconstruction and the emergence from the sleep state to the awake state and the reflection, what are your collective thoughts on that?
Boy, that's a good one. I'm loving this discussion, by the way. I have to step back and say that. It's great that you folks are participating like this. And I often derive information from these episodes. whether or not I act on the information as you did and try to get in touch with people.
I didn't act on it, but I reflected very quickly. I'm now still cultivating whether or not I should act on it, so that's really the second part of my question.
Okay. Well, I'll be interested to find out what happens if you do.
Yeah, I can tell you that that's certainly an important component of dream work lore, is to take that step and to move it into the world of action in terms of growing from one's dreams, sending a message to the unconscious that, hey, I take what you have to say to me seriously enough that I'm going to move it into the real world, either by taking literal action, which is not always appropriate, of course, or by taking some kind of symbolic action, but action nonetheless. So that's something to think about. Some of this thinking goes back to reports of Sonoy dreaming, the Sonoy being a Malaysian group who was reported, kind of an Aboriginal group, who was reported to have dream work be a part of their daily family and communal ritual. And so if you dreamt ill of another person, in that culture, you're supposed to go and give that person a gift as a kind of undoing.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to toss in another thought here. I often use this to speak with people who have departed the current reality, relatives and friends of mine who are deceased.
Mm.
And the interesting thing for me is that they generate their own speech, their own communication. It's not something I'm thinking about. And sometimes they actually talk to each other, and I'm just an observer.
Certainly, I've had that experience as well. I think what's fascinating is the ability to gain real-world insight from this. And this is the point that I've always found confusing. I mean, is it just a situation where we observe things in a kind of jumble and only in this state can we resolve them for ourselves, or do you feel that there's a kind of deeper kind of oneness with the universe? What's your thinking with regards to this?
Well, my thinking is that that's a worthwhile hypothesis and one to explore, at least at an experiential level, if not an experimental one. Jerry?
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I don't know what to think about all of this. As you know, I'm a kind of a hard-bitten scientific type, and yet I really enjoy these forays into the unknown. And I mean, to me, I'm also a videographer and a film maker, and I have actually had a cast of people on my mind, on my hypnagogic stage, talking to each other and saying things, and then I've also been able to say, oh, wait a minute, let's do that over again. And then they all go, okay, and they will replay the scene.
I have to cut
it. Dialogue.
Unfortunately, I have to cut in here. I'm getting a signal that there's less than a minute remaining. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, Tom, I hope you weren't hanging out here too long before I noticed that you were trying
to
get in.
Good talking with you both.
Yeah, yes. Thanks so much for joining
Take
us.
Care.
And hopefully we'll have a chance to do this again. And Susan, also, I want to thank you.
Okay, well, you know, this was the question I wanted to ask.
Right.
So we sure timed it right, huh?
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, we'll have to do this again. And so I want to thank anybody else out there who might have been listening and didn't call in or didn't send a chat message. We valued your presence nonetheless. And Jerry, thanks again for your willingness and openness to doing this.
Hey, Dave, I love this show. I think it's taken off.
Well, maybe we'll have to make it a regular feature. I think
All
maybe.
Right.
We'll have to do that. So let's see. I'm seeing a countdown clock here. We've got 42 seconds. Anything else that you want to say in 38 seconds? In 35?
Just what I just want to reiterate what I just said. I think you need to keep this dialogue going. In fact, I'm thinking about using it to branch out into other areas completely. The blog talk radio, I think, is just a natural. Let's do it again.
Okay, well, I'll look forward to that. So this is Dr. Dave and Jerry Trumbull saying that's it for now, and inviting you to go to shrinkwrapradio.com or iTunes to listen to the 123 other episodes that are up there. And that
it's all in your mind, Dave.
We didn't get that in time. I forgot. You got to remind me. So there you have it, Shrink Wrap Radio Live number 2. We hope you found it informative and entertaining. We're doing it again next Sunday, December 16th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. You can tune in by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/shrinkwrapradio. It's a good idea to register on the site beforehand so that your name will show up when you join the chat. And I'm not quite sure how you find the chat, but there is a chat window that you can open once you're there. And if you want to call in, which would be wonderful, the phone number to call is 646-595-4286. And that is in New York City. Now, as Jerry pointed out, if you join Skype at www.skype.com for a year for $14.95, if you live in the U.S., you'll be able to make all your long-distance calls in the U.S. and Canada for free. And if you live outside the U.S., there's some comparable charge, and then you get a very small per-minute long-distance charge as well. Now, in next Sunday's Shrink Wrap Radio Live show, Jerry and I are going to try our hand at doing a guest interview. And our guest will be Shrink Wrap Radio listener and podcaster in his own right, Tom Barbalay, who you heard call in at the tail end of the show. Tom is very knowledgeable about artificial life and artificial intelligence and such topics, and it'll be fun to learn what he has to share with us. Now, I'm going to take time to read only one email, and it's from Susan G., our other caller on today's show. She sent it shortly after the show, and it reads as follows. Dr. Dave, what fun to talk with you. I'm now sitting in front of my wood stove, glancing at a cloudy, silvery, snowy landscape, first covering of the year here in Arizona. The blogtalkradio.com is frustrating because it's full of ads and links to other shows. I finally tabbed about 20 links down the page to something about live and 47 minutes remaining and eventually found the play button. I had expected the audio to start as soon as I logged in, as the previous show had played automatically. I went through the registration process yesterday, rather painful, lied about my age, but did get the screen name. Another simpler chat setup I use is at http://accessibleworld.org, which has interactive microphone and replay there of book clubs. Another piece of advice is to have some way to try audio volume and quality. Your show was too low in volume relative to my screen reader voice, but I could not find my speakers that were definitely needed. Oh, I see. So you have some other speakers that you couldn't find. It might be that headphones would work better. I don't know that I have much control over the volume on your end. And I'm wondering if, in fact, you went to, I think if you go to the URL, you know, maybe you should wait to sign in till, you know, say 10 seconds after the top of the hour, and then sign in so we'll know that it's underway, and go straight to blogtalkradio.com/shrinkwrapradio. And indeed, you should hear the show playing once it's underway. And so I think it can be much simpler. I'm not sure why it was as difficult as it was. Then Susan goes on to talk about our hypnagogic discussion. She says, after the hypnagogic discussion, I realized why the faces I see are like Greek or Roman sculpture without fine detail of age lines, blemishes, and much color. The faces are abstractions of everyday faces I have known, but no longer see in much detail except in certain light settings. The effect is rather eerie as the faces come out of a swirling cloud, last about a minute, then dissolve back into the cloud. Knowing of the Charles Bonnet syndrome discussed at http://mdsupport.org, I was not surprised or upset, just interested in what to make of the faces. However, I'm now reading time travel books and do wonder if the faces might pull me back a few centuries. I enjoyed the Exploratorium guided podcast. Hey, thanks. I'm really glad to hear that you did. This first bit of feedback I've had on it, I think. Thinking about how I would interact with the exhibits, one of the hardest things about vision loss is being left out of visual cues of emotion and action, which often irritates myself and others in any group. For example, introducing myself twice or thrice to the same person, speaking out of turn and missing cues, not to mention suffering as buffet challenged meals. I wonder if there could be an exhibit that could interact with people who lack the usual social cues. For example, communicating without eye contact or with a person staring at you. I certainly feel for you with the visual challenges that you're dealing with, Susan. And, you know, I can only imagine those difficulties. I have had a minor version of that with some loss of hearing, which, you know, probably will be progressive. But one of the reasons why I had to retire was it seemed like my students, particularly my female students, were talking softer and softer, and I would keep asking them to speak up. And they'd try their best, but they couldn't seem to speak up enough. And it was embarrassing to me. And I began to think that maybe people were joking about it behind my back or something like that. So, you know, I definitely understand how dealing with a disability can raise all sorts of complications and psychological challenges. She goes on to say, my more general question is about studies of plasticity of the brain taking over functions of different senses. It totally amazes me that I can read using a synthetic voice, and yet the brain is so wired for speech, it reacts as if synthetic voices had gender. That's very interesting. She says, I hope my web difficulties point out some ways to improve the live the live shrink wrap radio. It was great, Susan. And I believe that Susan has a blog here. She's given us the address. So please check out Susan's blog at http://asyourworldchanges.wordpress.com. And Susan, we're beginners at this, Jerry and I. And we're just figuring out Blog Talk Radio as we go along. And certainly it's taken me 2 years to figure out how to do my regular podcasts. And I feel like I'm finally getting on top of that process. I'm hoping that it doesn't take that long to get proficient on Blog Talk Radio. But we're having fun with this format. And I'm really hoping that more and more of our regular listeners will come and join us in the interactive format. And if you're not able to join us, I hope that you're enjoying the replay that I'm providing here. If not, you can just skip them when you see them in the feed. So with that, I'll wrap it up for now, and I'll put out another podcast later in the week, one of our regular podcasts. So remember, you can send emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave messages on Skype, where our name is ShrinkPod. Tim left me a nice long message there, which unfortunately got damaged, so I didn't get to play it or even hear all of it, but I heard most of it, so thanks for that, Tim. And remember, you can also leave voicemail for me at 206-337-0622. As always, I'm grateful to Podshow and GoDaddy.com for their sponsorship. So for now, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.